Stay tuned for Nightline Africa, coming up right after these latest world news headlines.
I'm Michael Brown reporting. At this hour here in Washington, thousands of environmental activists are marching to the White House in an effort to draw support for climate-related causes. The People's Climate March coincides with President Donald Trump's 100th day in office, who have condemned what they see as the administration's lack of concern for environmental issues. Trump has stated he does not believe the science behind climate change. President Trump will be spending part of his 100th day in office in the politically friendly state of Pennsylvania. Trump's reelection campaign said he will tout his accomplishments during a rally in Harrisburg. Trump spoke of his 100 days on the job during his weekly address on Saturday.
I truly believe that the first 100 days of my administration has been just about the most successful in our country's history. Our country is going up, and it's going up fast. Our companies are doing better. They just announced fantastic profits, all because of what's happened in this rather short period of time. And that's just the beginning.
The Democrats, however, had a different view, that is, of Mr. Trump's first 100 days on the job during the party's weekly address.
During the campaign, we heard the president promise that he would keep jobs here at home, buy and hire American, and hold countries like China accountable for their unfair trade practices. But as president, Donald Trump has proposed deep cuts to job training programs, refused to label China a currency manipulator, and has done nothing to stop companies from outsourcing jobs.
Senator Brian Schatz. For more news, we invite you to join us here in Washington from here in D.C. This is VOA News. Pope Francis, the leader of the world's Roman Catholics, celebrated Mass Saturday on the second and final day of his historic visit to Egypt. Francis' visit comes amid difficult times for Egyptian Coptic Christians, one of the largest and oldest minority groups in the Middle East. Early this month, more than 40 people were killed in three churches that were attacked, that attack claimed by the Islamic State militants. European Union leaders unanimously adopted their Brexit strategy at a special summit in Brussels on Saturday. Talks with Britain will begin shortly after its general elections on June 8th. Donald Tusk, the president of the European Council, spoke about what's ahead.
The U.S. Secretary of State made his...
Over the past weeks, we have repeatedly heard from our British friends, also during my visit in London, that they are ready to agree on this issue quickly. But I would like to state very clearly that we need real guarantees for our people to live, work, and study in the UK. And the same goes for the Brits.
The 27 leaders met without Britain for the first time since Prime Minister Theresa May triggered the divorce process a month ago. May this week accused the EU of ganging up on London in a war of words with German Chancellor Angela Merkel, who said Britain had illusions about the talks. Philippine President Rodrigo Duterte opened the last day of a four-day Association of Southeast Asian Nations summit with a warning that they all are facing the downfalls of illegal drugs. The summit in Manila also has not yielded any criticism from the leaders about China over its expansion in the contested South China Sea, a sign some analysts say of Britain's, or make that of Beijing's, economic diplomatic influence. And once again, just recapping our top stories at this hour. At this moment, a march continuing here in Washington, thousands of environmental activists are marching toward the White House in an effort to draw support for climate-related causes. They intend to sort of encircle themselves around the White House once that portion of the march is concluded. The People's Climate March is coinciding with President Donald Trump's 100th day in office. He's heading out to Pennsylvania, an area that he performed well in during last year's presidential campaign, for a huge rally in the capital of Harrisburg later today. For details on much more news, we invite you to join us at our website. That is voanews.com. From here in Washington, I'm Michael Brown reporting.
That's the latest world news from VOA.
Good evening and welcome to Nightline Africa. We are coming to you live from the English service of The Voice of America. Thanks for joining us. I'm Peter Clotty in Washington.
This is a country where people are struggling to buy maize. People can't buy rice. People are not bothered whether there is someone somewhere who has forged the certificate.
Tanzanian President John Magufuli fires nearly 10,000 public sector workers for using fake education certificates.
Ghana is back to business. You know, inflation is also going down, which will impact on interest rates. The power supply has been quite consistent and stable since we came.
Ghanaian finance minister says investors are optimistic about the prospects of the new administration.
It has been chaotic in some areas, and you know, many political parties in Kenya are not very well organized when it comes to conducting political party primaries.
And political parties in Kenya hold primaries to choose candidates who will represent them in the upcoming general election. Those stories and more coming up on Nightline Africa. Tanzanian President John Magufuli has fired over 9,000 public sector workers for using fake education certificates. This after a recent government report into fraudulent qualifications in the public sector was released. Officials say the public workers used certificates of relatives while others used fake certificates. Critics, however, say this is yet another public relations exercise to divert attention from the economic challenges the country faces. Professor Xavery Loitama of Josiah Kibira University College told me President Magufuli should rather focus on addressing bread and butter issues.
First of all, don't forget that this is a country where only the digital divide between those with digital access and those without is wide. The majority don't have digital access. So I don't know that there is necessarily a lot of discussion among ordinary people about whatever the president might have done. That's number one. But number two, I don't think the public is really taken in by whatever the president might do, because he has a regional commissioner of Dar es Salaam who has been in the public limelight as having had forged certificates, and he has gone on record defending him.
Professor Loitama, 10,000 public sector workers, some are saying, are too many people that are siphoning public funds without the necessary certificate. How big is the black market producing certificate for jobs in Tanzania?
You see, what I'm saying is that I don't think, as far as the general public is concerned, this is an issue. You know, this is a country where the cost of living has gone up. This is a country where people are struggling to buy maize. People can't buy rice. People are not bothered whether there is someone somewhere who has forged a certificate, because, you know, that is an issue for those who have employed that person. My reading is that the president is trying yet again to, put himself in this position of clearing all this backlog of unethical behavior in Tanzania. But people are asking themselves, how come he has protected the regional commission of Dar es Salaam, who clearly has shown himself to have forged the certificate? So, I mean, people are just asking themselves, is the president using this yet again as a public relations gimmick? Because if the president really wanted to demonstrate that he was against the use of forged certificates, then he would have fired long ago, you know, the regional commissioner for Dar es Salaam.
The president has given those on the list who are alleged to have forged certificate until 15 May to resign or face legal action. Now, some people I spoke with are saying, why didn't the president fire them right away Or why didn't he ask for their prosecution for going into public service with fake certificate, knowing that that is unethical and possibly criminal too?
You see, this is why I'm saying, at the end of the day, if you ask me, I don't know what this hullabaloo about, you know, these the people that the president might want to fire is about. Because, I mean, anybody who is asking for a job, who is looking for a job, will submit certificates. If they don't qualify, they will be disqualified. If they have been recruited, then there is no reason why this should be made a public issue. You know, they should be quietly retired, and then we should continue. But the issue is living standards are going up, and it is people are worried about their lives, not about whether some public official is a forged certificate.
So, Professor Laitama, you think the president, because of what is alleged to be his own popularity based on actions he's taken, this is yet another public relations exercise for him?
Precisely. Because if this was serious, why hasn't he fired the regional commissioner for Dar es Salaam? You know, this gentleman is said to have failed his form 4, is said to have failed his standard 7. He has acted in a manner which is, you know, which anybody, I mean, you know, would take to be criminal. But the president has gone on record as saying we shouldn't be bothered by that because he's doing a good job.
Xavier Loaitama is a political science professor at the Josiah Kibira University College. He spoke with me from the Tanzanian commercial capital, Dar es Salaam. The Ghanaian finance minister says investors were positive in meetings with senior government officials who accompanied Vice President Mohamedou Bouamia to the World Bank spring meeting in Washington. Ken Ofori-Atta said investors detected a new energy and a sense of hope in a team that is competent and focused on getting Ghana out of its current predicament. Last month, the finance minister presented the budget to Parliament outlining the government's priorities and plans for the fiscal year. Ken Ofori-Atta stopped by the VOA studios where I asked him about the response from the business community after the government started to implement policies outlined in the budget.
Well, first of all, Peter, it was quite an amazing thing, quite electrifying, because it was the first budget in our lifetime that we have read that we got such a spontaneous and unanimous acclaim, and not only from those who get capital gains, dividends, you know, not being taxed, but from the spare parts dealer in Abusokai through magazine, etc., all the way through. And so that was quite powerful. So it's Ghana is back to business. You know, inflation is also going down, which will impact on interest rates. The power supply has been quite consistent and stable since we came, so businesses can work. I think we are on to something good.
Tell me, what is your targeted economic growth, and will they be realistic enough to jumpstart the economy?
Yeah, we were at 3.6% last year, and our targeted growth this year is 6.3%. I mean, long term, we should be going to 9% and moving up. And so I think we are fine moving from 3.6 to 6.3 for this year, and looking as oil strengthens to be able to do much more. I think one of the difficulties in our budget is the issue of our debt stock and what we have to pay in interest, about $2.4 billion of interest every year. So that we need to bring down in a significant way, and we are working towards that.
How do you plan on decreasing that sharply? Because a lot of people have expressed concern about how ballooning the deficit is.
Yeah, the deficit has been bad, and the debt to GDP ratio has been strangulating. It's now about 72.5%. That gives you very little wiggle room. I think the challenge really is to try and get it down, but I'm not sure you can bring it down fast enough. However, we've taken the strategy to what we say reprofile the debt, so that instead of the short-term 182-day one-year, we negotiated to extend the tenor of our debt to 15 years, And that was successfully done. We're able to attract $2.25 billion, you know, on March 31st, extending the tenor to 15 years. And that immediately led to about 612 million CDs worth of savings each year, which is quite dramatic, and also a relief in a sense. I think the $2.2 billion coming in strengthened the Bank of Ghana with regards to our reserves. And so we have seen in foreign exchange rates stabilize to about 4.2, 4.1, which is great. Because once people feel they can plan and they can trust that the economy will be stable, I think a lot more people execute transactions. So that is the beauty of what we have done with the debt. We expect to reprofile up to about $10 billion of it over time. And we are looking at other means to do that.
Talk to me about how you intend to raise funds to help with your work, because revenue generation is key. Mm-hmm.
It is. I mean, there are five pillars, actually, that we are looking at: revenues, expenditure, the wage bill, statutory funds, which we had to cap, and then the debt stock. Now, statutory funds plus wage bills plus debt servicing constitute 107% of revenue. We just made it impossible to do much. And so we're able to go through Parliament and cap the statutory funds about 25% of revenue. And that in itself released about 4.5 billion CDs of fiscal space. That gives us the options to ensure that our economic policies are effected. We realign how monies are used and we have some savings, so that would help. But on the revenue measures itself, that's Ghana Revenue Authority. We have changed the commissioner, we've changed quite a number of people in customs. There are various task forces being instituted to make sure that we get the type of resources that we need. But we also feel that once corporate begins to work again, we'll then be getting the appropriate corporate taxes, which will support the revenue growth.
Ken Oforiatta is the Ghanaian finance minister. He spoke with me from here in Washington, D.C. Political parties in Kenya are holding primaries to choose the candidates who will represent them in the general election. The exercise has been marred by violence in some regions since the exercise kicked off on April 13. The primaries, which are managed by political parties, end tomorrow, Sunday. Isaac Ongiri is a senior political reporter for a major Kenyan newspaper, The Daily Nation. My colleague Douglas Impuga reached him in the Kenyan capital, Nairobi, to find out more about the party primaries.
It has been chaotic in some areas, and you know, many political parties in Kenya are not very well organized when it comes to conducting political party primaries. The law requires political parties to use registered members list, but both the Jubilee Party and the Orange Democratic Movement Party were using IEBC register instead of their own register. The political party register compared to the IEBC register is way below the total number of registered voters. So the law was not followed, and you know, many political parties also appeared disorganized in terms of logistical arrangements, ballot papers in some stations, especially in the case of ODM, nominations were fewer than the number they expected to participate in those primaries. There are a lot of corruptions here and there as well, quite a number of cases where somebody is declared a winner, and shortly after, another person is declared a winner by the same returning officer. Preparations for this particular primary was below average, in my own opinion.
It must have been more chaotic in the main opposition, ODM, given the current realignment in choosing their presidential candidate.
You know, all the parties in the main opposition are fielding candidates for all the other five positions. So they are conducting their own primaries. Of course, it will affect them in the general elections when they compete against a single Jubilee candidate. So we haven't had a lot of confusion in terms of, because there wasn't any joint nomination for four or five parties supporting the National Super Alliance, the coalition that is bringing together Honorable Raila Odinga, Musalia Mudavadi, Isaac Ruto, and Kalonzo Musyoka, and Moses Wetangula.
How about the fate of independents, those who intend to contest as independents?
Many people are trooping to the independent to try and contest as independent, especially those in ODM, because by and large the nominations in ODM were not as free, as fair as was expected. So, like for example, the case of Homa Bay County, where the current Member of Parliament for Kasipul, the Honorable Oyugi Magwanga, was actually winning when vote tallying was continuing, but shortly before the official results was announced or before all the constituencies assembled, the returning officer at Homa Bay County decided to declare the incumbent governor the winner, even without results from the 8 constituencies as was expected. So the Honorable Yugi Magwanga, the Honorable Sammy Wakiaga, who are the main challengers of the incumbent, have decided to file a case at the internal party tribunal.
We know that these primaries are being solely organized by political parties. But to what extent could this chaos pass on to the general election?
What I know is that there will be serious voter apathy, especially in Nyanza province. This has been the case, you know. Elections in Nyanza, especially at primaries, have never been free and fair. People expected free and fair elections this time round, because in the two previous elections, after conducting a shambolic primaries, the capital liability always cascaded to the presidential elections, where the Honorable Raila Odinga, who has been presidential candidate in the past two elections, has always suffered liability. But there was very little change or change of tune or even in the management of affairs in this particular election. So we expect that there will be more apathy once again. Individuals who did not lose fairly will not take their time or get interested in the general elections itself. And as such, it may disadvantage the Honorable Raila Odinga.
Isaac Ongiri is a senior political reporter for a major Kenyan newspaper, The Daily Nation. He spoke with my colleague Douglas Impuga from Nairobi. A group of experts meeting at the World Health Organization recommends the use of a promising experimental Ebola vaccine in future outbreaks of this fatal disease. The Strategic Advisory Group of Experts on Immunization, known as SAGE, has also issued recommendations on the use of vaccines for polio, cholera, and diphtheria. For VOA, Lisa Schlein has details from Geneva.
The 2013 Ebola outbreak in West Africa killed 11,300 people, highlighting the need for a vaccine to get control of this deadly virus. Of 12 candidate vaccines, only one, which was tested in Guinea, reportedly has proven to be clinically effective. However, the chair of SAGE and WHO senior health advisor Alejandro Cravioto notes the vaccine is not yet licensed. Therefore, it should only be used under strict conditions, such as informed consent.
That means people have to sign that saying that they want to take the vaccine, and under the conditions that we call good clinical practices, we still have something that could really be of help in case we have something that could happen in the near future.
Cravioto tells VOA this vaccine could be a game changer because it has demonstrated its effectiveness and its impact in a particular setting with a particular species of Ebola.
It is important to keep in mind that we are not recommending, or SAGE is not recommending currently, and there's no evidence to recommend wide-scale use of the vaccine and to again start to vaccinate before occurrence of outbreak. We have no idea of the duration of protection that's afforded by the vaccine to start with.
SAGE recommends the so-called ring strategy that was used in the 1970s to eradicate smallpox to deliver the Ebola vaccine. This involves vaccinating people who are infected with the virus and all those who have come in contact with them. This method creates a buffer zone or protective ring around the patient to prevent the spread of infection. Lisa Schlein for VOA News, Geneva.
The The Voice of America recently signed a partnership deal with a major Ugandan independent television station, NBS, in the capital, Kampala. The agreement will enhance collaboration on content, journalist training, and technical support. To talk about the agreement, I'm joined live in the studio by Dr. King Karisa, the Chief Executive Officer of NBS Television. Hello, Dr. Karisa.
Yes, Peter. How are you?
I'm well, thank you. And how are you?
Very good.
All right. Now, tell me, Dr. Karisa, tell our audience as well more about the agreement you signed with officials with the VOA in Kampala recently.
Yeah, thank you, Peter. We had this agreement some time back, but just 2 weeks ago, we were visited by Director Amanda and her team, and we had very good meetings in relation to what we can do. We can do more to make sure that Africans and indeed the world get to know what is happening in Uganda by sharing resources in terms of technical but also personnel.
How did the meeting go from your perspective?
It went very well, and we were surprised that actually when the team from VOA met our team in Uganda, more so our reporters, they thought and felt that they are at a level where they can share resources that can be shared all over the world.
Now, what will this deal mean personally to you as the director of CEO of NBS and NBS television in general?
To me, Peter, I think the world is a world of collaboration. It is a global world. We are sharing resources, and this means to us that we shall do more with less in terms of if I need a story, let's say, from South Africa or from even Washington, VOA should be able to give me a resource, to give me a story or give me a link. To me, I'll be using less resources and giving Ugandans and indeed East Africans more all over the world by leveraging on this partnership.
From the Ugandan perspective and your audience as NBC Television and in the region, what should Ugandans, Africa and the world expect from this agreement?
You see, by Peter, Uganda is well positioned in the Great Lakes region, and you know this is a very chaotic region. And instead of Voice of America, let's say if there's something happening in South Sudan or in Congo, or even Rwanda or Kenya right now, they have elections, we should be able within 30 minutes to dispatch a team and they give you a link or they give you a report as soon as possible. So we believe the world will benefit out of this partnership, those who are hooked into VOA. But also, on the other hand, Ugandans, we plan to do collaborative investigative stories with Voice of America, and they have talented reporters. So our people will be exposed to their skills and their tactic, and be able to give them more in-depth investigative stories that will shine a light on many things that are happening in Africa. And this will help Ugandans to understand more their neighborhood, their surroundings, and the Great Lakes region.
You know, in an environment, traditionally, there are political influences and all that. Do you think the collaboration with VOA journalists practicing here and those who have had the opportunity of practicing on the continent will help with the strengthening of skills of both sides?
Absolutely. We believe you have experienced resource here and all over the world. Our people will have that kind of exposure by working with them on projects together. We plan to do projects like poaching in Africa, drugs, the influence of donor money and following that donor money into Africa, whether it comes back this end or it stays in Africa and is used by politicians. So we want to do stories that will impact Ugandans, but also the world will know, because I believe VOA will broadcast these stories across the world.
Including the current drought that is plaguing the subcontinent.
Absolutely, there. Absolutely. You know, there is hunger. You can imagine Uganda is a food basket for maybe East Africa. We supply foodstuff all over East Africa, Kenya, you know, Congo, South Sudan, Rwanda. They feed out of Uganda. You can't imagine right now there's food relief. They are supplying food to this region. So would be able to give you stories as they happen.
Now, last 10 seconds. What is your mission here in DC, and what impact do you think this agreement will have?
Basically, when Director Amanda visited, I did promise that I would visit VOA to enhance and further this partnership. And I visited a couple of people here to learn more what you do and what more content we can take to Ugandans and East Africans in general.
Have you been able to satisfy your curiosity while here?
Absolutely.
Well, that was Dr. Kane Karisa, the Chief Executive Officer of a major Ugandan independent television station, NBS Television. He spoke with me from here in the VOA studios in Washington. You are listening to Nightline Africa on the English service of The Voice of America. I'm your host, Peter Clote, in Washington, D.C. Coming up in the second half of Nightline Africa, the Saturday music spot from a collection of music from the continent. And right now it's time for music from our African collection.
Your love is making me go crazy. On tumble it, I'm almost tired. Okay, breakfast in bed. Yeah, we put it away one day. Sick of quake or could ya come or chagat? Yeah, when I look tanga, when I la sanga, would you jendaga? What's all your kunyanga set laga? Appetite in my shanga. No mutimanga, we uva. Was a kaku yachama. Shambasik wa kwe rozana, tala moru toku de. I'm loving your love, baby. I'm loving your love daily. What thing I see na kwacha msao. I'm loving your love daily. Nzeko kwempito wange. I'm loving your love daily. What thing I see na kwacha msao. Electric guitar melody. Mumatonde ta insanity. Wawa wendi eno Uganda banga California. Kankubuhunire akusinga wena nunya ya. Baby, no fire can cool without you. Only na body perfume and soap. Musau, karibu kwangu. Nikupe mapenzi yote darling. Yekwe ansana. Delicious tomato soup, baby. Wana we wapata. I want punza nisa nisa. I'm loving your love, baby. Nzeko kwempito wange. I'm loving your love daily. Watenga sina kwacha musau. I'm loving your love, baby. Nzeko kwempito wange. I'm loving your love daily. Watenga sina kwacha musau. Dance kuma pesa. When you want it, Jeff power, get it your table, Jagger, and the Janja and Yumira. Yes, I'm so in love with you, my sweet, sweet addiction to Yumira. Only Mama Sapons, the cook, when every time was a supper to sit on my chin 20 single Kumumi and Titoni Mafutam come to Kakala, Chimpan Kuvira winter, and get him being Mr. Water. Tiki tiki tik tak, na ninda kule tere switi. Kukuvira winter, na nehebi kere mbini se wota. Katiki tiki tik tak, na ninda kwe baby wona ta. I'm loving your love, baby. Nzepwe kwe mpito wange. I'm loving your love daily. Watenga sina kwa tamusa. I'm loving your love, baby. Nzepwe kwe mpito wange. Quantum, Siba mu maulire kuba abayagala bamanyike abalala ku radio yona abatukayo barange naye nga bomanyi amasogo mulungi bwegasabira omubi amaze pita muyisina mulungi kale eyo mukubone ndomesa abangi kale era kati tulina hitino nakawani kafera kakute era kati tulina hiti Machinga, you was a cassacanda to Fanagana, but you got what to fit in. So for the Baba Robe, Sabri Wamantala, Bamantala, Brija Itabagamba, Wana Murunji,
Bamantala,
Akuna Mucheta, one you know, one is stuck in
Bamantala,
Bamantala, Brija Itabagamba, Wana Musu,
Bamantala,
Akuna Mucheta, one you know, one is stuck in entertainment. Whoa. Katika nina kwenja garo manye sitaki mwengine. Ebirala newe vikaruba na yolo woza kukwe chafuka chirwade. Na ondaba na fuka chisolo zolo kuba mukwano gukanude. Wabula baby okuba kubaka wawokonza tonyo mwenge tamide. What should I do?
Massive. sine lusida Baby onyu mira muzika
Muzika I'll never let you go
Yezu muya yevwe batia Agana gama
Ono chatankore Alavi kana munya kore Pano te van sobole Pateza kobi soson kore Ono chatankore Alavi kana munya kore Pano te van sobole Pateza kobi soson kore Ava fugalinga na munya kore Stairo ye figa ye ya chinya kore Mwana kwenze chuta kore Kuroza ichi chinza chifu ya kore So wange uya o Kabako ya mugambe sina onya o Pepe toba wa o Hingi saa mugambe vera o Ono chata mkore Alavi kana munya kore wawe Pano te vansobole Pakeza kobi soso kore Ono chata mkore Alavi kana munya kore wawe Pano te vansobole Pakeza kobi soso kore wawe Uno chata mkore Alavi kana munya kore wawe Pano te vansobole Pakeza kobi soso kore wawe Uno chata mkore Alavi kana munya kore wawe Pano te vansobole Pakeza kobi soso kore wawe
Body and all. Oh my God. chirwande chisensera nomutima gusiwa kale nonkwatako uroganye ntakulako takula mpola 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 omutima togukwagula sigenda genda India ngomusawa namponya jolyenu sijja genda India ngomusawa namponya jolyenu nawe mbakukeya
Gwe mukwano guno Tokoza nyisa kwa tempola Tokuita kuyomba na olava Bangali wesenga nkulize hani Totuka Olwayo munange Obanga gamba Tife na yenga nkukozechi to gun to get that I want in to say I tell our Linda
Chona uchimani Naluli na kuolu goye Neloto ndavye Echiroye kwewe Nota Nelwe sise tumumu baka Sista wange ya kukume Echiro olemeo kutia Muju Kube chizibu Nino kufuba Nonyansibi Dwezime eneme Chukako Kale tonyiga Tokaba Ninda wikienja Sente zizo Nenze kumirimu
And that was Music from the Continent. We hope you enjoyed it. Nightline Africa comes to you on Saturdays and Sundays at 16 and 18 hours UTC from the English service of The Voice of America. And from the rest of the Nightline team, managing editor Shaka Sale, reporter Douglas Impuga, producer Odette Frazier, and our engineer for today, Justin Thwaites, we say a big thank you for joining us tonight. I remember, as the elders say, when a bush is on fire, a grasshopper has no time to say goodbye. I'm your host, Peter Clotter in Washington. Good evening, Africa.
Next, an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government.
The United States is shocked and deeply saddened by the death of a U.S. citizen serving as a paramedic with the Organization for Security and Cooperation in Europe, or OSCE, Special Monitoring Mission. The paramedic was killed when his vehicle struck an explosive in separatist-controlled territory in eastern Ukraine. Acting State Department spokesperson Mark Toner said the death underscores the increasingly dangerous conditions under which these courageous monitors work, including access restrictions, threats, and harassment. The United States urges Russia to use its influence with the separatists to allow the OSCE to conduct a full, transparent, and timely investigation. Since its establishment in 2014, the OSCE Special Monitoring Mission has played a vital role in overseeing the Minsk agreements designed to bring peace to eastern Ukraine. This incident makes clear the need for all sides, and particularly the Russian-led separatist forces, to fully implement their commitments under the Minsk agreements immediately. This includes a real and durable ceasefire, withdrawal of heavy weapons, and disengagement from the line of contact. The brave monitors of the OSCE have the full support of the United States. Mr. Toner said, "We condemn in the strongest terms all acts of hostility and intimidation toward the OSCE monitors. They must also have safe, full, and unfettered access throughout the conflict zone." The United States again calls upon Russia to use its influence with the separatists to take the first step toward peace in eastern Ukraine and ensure a visible, verifiable, and irreversible improvement in the security situation. Russia's actions in eastern Ukraine remain an obstacle to improved relations with the United States. U.S. Secretary of State Rex Tillerson spoke with Ukrainian President Petro Poroshenko by phone recently and reiterated the United States' firm commitment to Ukraine's sovereignty and territorial integrity. Secretary Tillerson confirmed that sanctions will remain in place until Russia returns control of the Crimean Peninsula to Ukraine and fully implements its commitments in the Minsk agreements.
That was an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government.